Hello, and welcome to another episode of Exiting the Cave Short Reads. We are continuing with The Consolation of Philosophy, and this week we begin Book 3. Chapter 1 is a relatively short chapter, but it is significant. Listen to this dialogue between Philosophy and Boethius, and when we return, I'll explain why it's so important.
She ceased, but I stood fixed by the sweetness of the song in wonderment and eager expectation, my ears still strained to listen. And then after a little I said, "Thou sovereign solace of the stricken soul, what refreshment hast thou brought me, no less by the sweetness of thy singing than by the weightiness of thy discourse? Verily, I think not that I shall hereafter be unequal to the blows of fortune. Wherefore, I no longer dread the remedies which thou saidst were something too severe for my strength. Nay, rather I am eager to hear them and call for them with all vehemence."
Then she said, "I marked thee, fastening upon my words silently and intently, and I expected, or, to speak more truly, I myself brought about in thee this state of mind. What now remains is of such sort that to the taste indeed it is biting, but when received within it turns to sweetness. But whereas thou dost profess thyself desirous of hearing, with what ardor would thou not burn, didst thou but perceive whither it is my task to lead thee?"
"Whither?" I said.
"To true felicity," said she, "which even now thy spirit sees in dreams, but cannot behold in very truth, while thine eyes are engrossed with semblances." Then I said, "I beseech thee, do thou show to me her true shape without a moment's loss."
"Gladly will I, for thy sake," said she. "But first I will try to sketch in words and describe a cause which is more familiar to thee, that, when thou hast viewed this carefully, thou mayst turn thy eyes the other way and recognize the beauty of true happiness. Who fain would sow the fallow field and see the growing corn, must first remove the useless weeds, the bramble and the thorn. After ill savor, honey's taste is to the mouth more sweet. After the storm, the twinkling stars the eyes more cheerily greet. When night hath passed, the bright dawn comes in car of rosy hue. So drive the false bliss from thy mind, and thou shalt see the true."
Up to this point, philosophy has been tutoring us in the various false forms of the good life. She has been carefully laying out the fundamental requirements of the good in itself by way of Aristotle's taxonomy, but using a Neoplatonic technique called apophatic theology. What this means is that she has been describing for us all the ways that are not the path to the good, and by winnowing down the list, helping us to identify the one remaining truth. Boethius, eager to know what that truth is, begs philosophy to show it to him, but she stays him, at least temporarily. This is the second time so far that Plato and Aristotle are intertwined in the dialogue between philosophy and Boethius. What is to come in the following chapter next week is an exegesis of the good, as set down in Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, but it is to be presented to us through the lens of Plato. This week, philosophy prepares us for that. Note the language of eyes engrossed with semblances. This is clearly a reference to Plato's dualism. There are two realities, one false and one true. The realm of the physical is an illusory veil of ever-changing semblances overlaying the eyes of the soul
and obscuring our view of the true reality of pure, unchanging truth, the realm of the famous forms. Philosophy tells Boethius he must turn his eyes the other way, understanding the nature of the good in itself, as argued for in the Ethics, being the true means to happiness, is the first step in that turning process. Philosophy is signaling two things for us here. First, that we are now making the transition from apophatic theology to cataphatic theology, which is to say, having exhausted all the ways in which the good is not, we must now look at what the good is. But more subtly, this is an attempt to evoke the imagery of the Socratic turn. Socrates dramatically recounts in his dialogues how he began his career in philosophy as a naturalist, observing the stars and investigating into the fundamental causes of being. At one point, I think he even admits to being an atomist. But at some point in his career, typically depicted at the moment his friend returns from the oracle at Delphi, Socrates realizes he must abandon his original pursuit and instead devote his efforts to the understanding of himself and his relationship to the good. Philosophy is telling us, as readers of the Consolation, that we must all prepare ourselves to make the same turn. From this point on, we begin to ascend the ladder, leaving the earth behind, in order to reach for the perfection of heaven. This may seem counterintuitive at first, because heaven seems to be something radically separate and far away from ourselves. But the Neoplatonist would say this is a mistake. The way to heaven is through the contemplation of one's own soul, because it is through that contemplation that the nature of God is revealed to us, and the keys to heaven along with it. So the turning inward is the turning outward, as the transcendence of heaven is revealed in the immanence of our own spirit. This sort of talk will send modern philosophers fleeing like cockroaches when the kitchen light is turned on. The materialist and analytic tendency in modern times has become a kind of dogmatic adherence for modern philosophers, desperate to separate themselves from the increasingly ill-reputed discipline of theology, in particular Christian mysticism. They have hitched their wagon to various forms of materialism as an alternative ontology which confers a kind of scientific authority to their arguments. I have to admit, I am attracted to this point of view. Science has established itself more or less adequately. But it is a mistake to think that, just because deductive reason and inductive inference from experience cannot account for all claims, then any claim that falls outside their rubric are necessarily untrue, or at least unknowable. This is too narrow a view of the universe, and this is what the Neoplatonists are pointing to. Plato understood that there are some things which come to us as knowledge which are not either reasoned or accumulated by the sense organs. Some say this is intuition, others a kind of pre-rational awareness. Plato, of course, argued that it was a special form of recollection of the soul. The soul, according to Plato, is heavily encumbered as it descends to earth. It accumulates layers like barnacles on an old ship that must be chipped at and scraped away in order to achieve a true understanding of the self and full awareness of the universe in which it is a part before it can ascend into heaven again. Philosophy is saying to Boethius that he's just about completed this divestiture. From here on out, listeners will face a choice of whether to continue or not. The discussion is still going to involve many philosophical issues that require rational analysis, not the least of which is the problem of free will. But the Consolation is as much a work of theology as it is philosophy, and for this reason, it expects readers to make a concession at this point. From here on, it is no longer possible to keep God at a comfortable philosophical arm's length, or to conflate soul with psychology as an intellectual trick. For the remainder of the consolation to make any sense, one must be at least nominally committed to the omni-god of Augustine and to the dualistic conception of soul encased in body. The reason I say this is because the work is primarily meditative in nature. As I've already mentioned, it is not a treatise. This is meant to help you ascend the ladder as much as it helped Boethius. If you do not already accept the ontology and the theogony of Boethius, then at best the rest of this work is going to be an exploration of theological history, and at worst, an exercise in patient curiosity. Some of what will be covered has already been covered, but we'll be doing it in a different way from here out. The approach will be much more contemplative and much less analytical. If you're still on board after all that, then you're in for a treat. Next week, philosophy explains the highest good and true happiness, and shows how it stands apart from the worldly pursuits as uniquely to be desired. See you next week.